and it's tears going. Fall away, fall away, oh. May the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I came.
What's up, Wisconsin?
Freedom, cut me loose.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy first Friday to June.
My goodness.
Ain't it grand we got here?
It's really weird because this whole week has gone on for 4 years, but this past month has gone on in the past 30 seconds.
Yes.
So I'm in a time warp of my own creation.
I have no time sensibility ever since COVID. It's just gone.
All gone. And then, a lot of other sensibilities are gone too, but yeah.
Yes, common sensibility. I hope you all have some plans this weekend to enjoy the beautiful outdoors. I know I will be, because happy Pride, Wisconsin. I love the month celebration. I especially love Pride Fest in Milwaukee. I know in each and every one of your communities, there is hopefully and likely something lovely going on to celebrate the salad bowl that is these United States. I think, is that the preferred metaphor now, as opposed to melting pot?
You know what? I like salad bowl.
I like
more
salad
than,
bowl.
It's like we're getting eaten rather than melted. It's nice.
Yeah.
I used to live in Chicago. One of my best friends lived in Boys Town, and my daughter and his daughter kind of grew up together. And I have a photo of them, 6 and 4 years old, walking through the detritus that was the Pride Parade. There's condoms everywhere, beer bottles everywhere, and just about the group of the happiest people on earth hanging around them. And the two of them are holding hands, just walking through with giant smiles
happy
on their face. It's full of confetti.
Let me just say this. Less condoms these days. There's probably still beer bottles, but I and a whole bunch of very fun folks from Civic Media will be walking in the Milwaukee Pride Parade. That steps off in the Fifth Ward at 2 p.m. on Sunday. We'll be out there. There'll be music. One of the things that I like best about the Pride Parade in Milwaukee and most other places these days is that it is actually an incredibly family-oriented event. All of my friends with kids bring their kids down. My friends got a pair of twins. I guess they always come in pairs if they're twins. They're 3 years old. They come down. She brought them last year at 2. She'll have them this year at 3. It is nothing but incredible community togetherness. I always feel so very good about the future and about the love that we can have for each other, no matter what our differences. I hope you have a beautiful weekend, everybody. We got a great show for you today. We're going to jump right in. It is day 5 of Biden's Top 100 here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We're, of course, going to have the Scani giveaway. That's going to hit at 3 o'clock. We got guests stacked up the whole show. It's going to be fun. And I will be doing a D-Day observance during the show. But I want to go right to my host for this, or my co-host, my special guest for this half hour, the senior director of tax policy for the Patriotic Millionaires, Bob Lord. Welcome, Bob. Nice to have you back again.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is the fastest I've ever been back on a radio show. What was it, 3 days ago I was on?
Yeah, we can't get enough of you, Bob Lord. And I think one of the reasons that we can't get enough of you is that I continue to be utterly amazed by this simple fact. Donald Trump cut taxes for the wealthiest corporations in our country by a significant margin. He cut taxes for billionaires by a significant margin. And folks that defend him, that may vote for him, the 70 plus million of those people, I don't think they realize that. I mean, forget the gray area in the middle, right, Bob? And like lots of people have different arguments about how to handle taxation and income tax for middle class folks. And they come on all kinds of the spectrum and it gets really wonky. But when we're talking about billionaires, or at least the top 10% of Americans, and we're talking about the most wealthy corporations, many of which do these sort of reverse mergers and situs themselves, make their base of operations somewhere overseas where they have a very low tax burden. He cut taxes on the big wealthy corporations and the wealthiest people in the country, and nobody seems bothered by it. Are you bothered by it, Bob? Because I am.
Well, yeah, look. Maggie, it's a threat to our democracy, and we're already seeing it destroy the democracy. Let me give you an example. You got this guy named Peter Thiel. He was one of the early investors in PayPal and I think in Tesla as well. And he figured out, really, I think this stepped over the line, but he was never called on it. He managed to avoid tax on $5 billion through a Roth IRA. And that was discovered in 2021, as reported by ProPublica. Back in earlier than that, Thiel had gone on the record saying he no longer believed that democracy and capitalism were compatible.
Wow.
Now, fast forward to 2022, and he basically bought himself a senator. He almost single-handedly financed the campaign of J.D. Vance. You think J.D. Vance is ever going to do something that Peter Thiel doesn't want him to do? And so here we have these billionaires. Their wealth is getting larger and larger through the because of the tax giveaways. And they're using just a tiny piece of that wealth to buy politicians. And by the way, buy Supreme Court justices.
No kidding, right? Samuel Alito, I'm looking at you. Here's what I'd like you to help me and everybody else to understand better. Let's make the connections between what is wealth inequality in this country, the likes of which we have not seen since the last Gilded Age, so before the Great Depression.
We've gone past the last Gilded Age.
I agree with you, Bob. And can you please draw the lines? What I want people to understand is the connections between taxes, especially taxation policy for the richest Americans and corporations, how that actually relates to the national debt, and how tax policy separately has this massive effect on wealth inequality and whether or not you and I and regular people year over year feel like we're doing any better, or like our kids will be able to do better. Why do we feel so cynical about the economy these days? Why is wealth inequality so out of hand now as opposed to where it was in the 50s and 60s?
Well, at the end, the firewall against too much wealth concentration is tax policy. You know, there are other policy decisions that go into it: antitrust, labor laws, intellectual property laws. But what we should have to absolutely protect us from undue wealth concentration is a tax policy that taxes wealth and income at the very, very top enough so that it doesn't unduly concentrate. And we lost that beginning in the late 70s and early 80s, particularly with Ronald Reagan and starting off with the Economic Recovery Tax Act and then going forward, where he brought the top rate on the richest Americans down from 70% to 28%. And when we don't have the tax law to protect from that undue wealth concentration, it becomes a vicious circle, because the more wealth they have, the more power they have. And the more power they have, the more wealth they can achieve. And we saw that play out in 2017, where they got these Republicans and Donald Trump, who they sponsor, whose elections campaigns they fund, to pass really a radical tax act that slashed their taxes.
So just to be clear, and so everybody's aware, that tax act that our guest this half hour, Bob Lord, is talking about from 2017, reduced the taxes on corporations from a maximum rate. It was effectively a tiered system, which isn't going to be unfamiliar to basically all of us suckers who work every day for a living and pay our income taxes. It had sort of a tiered system for corporate tax. The maximum rate under that tiered system before 2017 was 39%. That was slashed by Donald Trump and congressional Republicans in 2017 and brought that rate down to a uniform flat rate of 21%. I've read estimates that that almost immediately added $1.8 trillion to the deficit. Whoops. Let's just entertain the counter argument for a second, Bob. What's the argument in favor of those things? Because I hear it often. Well, that spurs job creation and people to start businesses and large corporations to reinvest. Why is that true? Is it true to just a certain extent? What's actually going on there?
Well, it's true that that is the counter argument. You got that part right.
Is the counter argument true?
No, it's not true. It's at the time those rates were slashed, corporate America was sitting on some ungodly amount, like $3 trillion of cash. They didn't have anything to invest in as far as job creation went. And the proof is what happened afterwards. Did they go invest the tax savings? No, they used it for stock buybacks. They used it to buy back stock from shareholders, which drove the stock market.
And it's interesting, stock buyback.
A lot of rich people. Yes. But how many people making $50,000 a year own a lot of stock?
No. I don't know. I got like mutual funds and 401k. I don't even know what's in there. I just hope it works over the long run. I got a question for you. Why do they use the stock buyback instead of a dividend?
Oh, because it works better tax-wise, and it can also drive the share prices.
Uh-huh. you drive
because,
the...
Because, see, a dividend...
Yes. Go ahead, Bob.
A dividend, there's two big tax differences between a dividend and a buyback. The first is that if you sell your stock back, you have gain, and you get to reduce the amount that you get by whatever you paid for the stock.
Uh-huh.
So you have less gain to recognize than you do with a dividend,
which is all taxable. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bob. We've got Bob Lord, senior tax policy advisor for the Patriotic Millionaires, here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We're talking about when corporations sit on like trillions of dollars, are they actually reinvesting it? Is it in our economy? Does it actually help you feel like you're doing any better? Why that is not the case when we come back. Don't go anywhere, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You got Brian Kelly in the booth and Bob Lord on the phone. So much knowledge to share. Keep it locked. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, I'ma keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
Guess what? Who are the suckers?
Might be owned by guys like Peter Thiel and Jeff Bezos and the billionaire set. You're not even getting taxed. The sucker's paying 25, 30%. You're paying what? 8% or less effective income tax rate.
Nice gig if you can get it.
Yeah. We're talking about corporation taxes, corporate taxes. We might get to a little personal income taxes as well with the senior tax policy advisor for the Patriotic Millionaires, Bob Lord. Welcome back, Bob. Thanks again for making time for the second time this week. This stuff is so important. We were talking just before we took those last messages about why we hear and the talking point that you hear from folks is lower corporate tax rates spur growth. And growth means that there's more money in the average American's pocket. But what we have actually observed, that's the argument, when we look at what has actually happened, especially in the 2020, from COVID forward time period and during Trump's last administration, is that the money that stays in a corporation's pocket because Donald Trump reduced corporate taxes from a highest rate in a tiered system of 39% to uniform a flat tax for corporations at 21% is they didn't reinvest all that cash that they had on hand and all the savings they had into worker wages and better benefits and expanding operations and buying more real estate or buying more hard assets. What were they doing with it, Bob? It was two things. Stock buybacks, right? That
well,
was one of them.
Well, they were stock buybacks. And as we start to talk about, there's two differences between buybacks and
yes.
dividends. One
yes.
is that there's less income to tax because they get to offset with the amount they get with what they paid for the stock. But more importantly, foreign shareholders, and foreign shareholders own like 40% of U.S. traded corporations. Foreign shareholders generally, under most tax treaties, don't pay tax on their gains from the sale of their stock. They do pay tax. They do pay U.S. tax on dividends, but they don't on gains. So big difference there.
So as they're scooping up stock and paying off basically the investor class, what are they growing their businesses? Like, is some of it true, or is it almost, I mean, is it just going out the door in executive compensation? Because I know President Biden has proposed to limit the way that corporations can use the huge amounts that they pay their executives to reduce and effectively dodge corporate taxes. So if you're with me, everybody, you're Acme Incorporated. You're like, oh, I'll pay my CEO $4 million. That'll be basically a cost of doing business, and that'll reduce our overall income. And so the corporation is dodging tax by overcompensating, many would argue, CEOs. That's part of what's going on, just incredible pay at the highest levels of the businesses.
Well, you know, they when your effective tax rate isn't even the 21%, in a lot of cases it's zero, you don't really need that deduction. So in the Trump Tax Act, they actually did improve that limitation on the deductibility of executive pay. But really, getting back to your question, Maggie, corporate profits have gone up, but they didn't go up by like expanding their businesses or anything like that. They went up in kind of a really insidious way through things like junk fees and shrinkflation. You know, the American Prospect just did a piece on this, and they identified four or five ways these corporations are just gouging the American consumer. And if you think about it, every time you or I get gouged for a couple of bucks when we buy something, some of that money goes into the bank account of a billionaire.
There's a direct line most of the time.
There's a direct line.
I also think
about the person who's struggling, who, you know, overdraws on their bank account and gets hit with some ungodly fee for overdrawing.
Yeah.
Well, that goes to the shareholders of the bank, which mostly are really, really rich people, including billionaires.
Yes. Just a couple of other factoids about what Biden is proposing in his second term. Raising the tax rate for corporations, in other words, undoing that reduction from Trump's 2017 corporate tax cuts. He's also looking to bring the tax rate up for U.S. multinational foreign earnings from 10% to 21%. That's a huge deal. So a lot of U.S. companies, again, have tried to sort of reverse engineer their way into being citist elsewhere. Increasing that tax rate is going to put a ton of money in workers' pockets back here, at least we would hope. We can talk about federal tax subsidies for oil and gas manufacturers. We can talk about the like-kind exchange loophole. Lots of it. Joe Biden is trying to make our tax system more fair. We got about 3 minutes, excuse me. Bob, when you look at these, just the trajectory of our country and the income inequality, the wealth inequality, what is the most important thing for people to understand, or what should they be asking or looking for from candidates, whether it's a president, a senator, a congressman, in order to try to have the middle class grow again, to reduce this incredible wealth inequality that we're seeing? What's the most important thing for people to understand or to ask candidates about in terms of tax policy to try to address the bad direction that our country's going in?
I think it's to focus on how the super wealthy are going to be taxed, and not with less concern for the federal debt and the federal deficit. You get involved in the debt and the deficit, and then all of a sudden you're talking about taxing everybody and cutting spending and so forth. The bigger issue is this massive accumulation of wealth. We cannot have billionaires with $100 billion and $200 billion of wealth. It just makes them too powerful. And that's the place to start, is to break up this huge concentration of wealth. So when they're if they're talking about, you know, taxing income from wealth the same as income from work, that's a really good sign. If they're talking about ending this ridiculous exemption of a married couple for $27 million from any estate and gift tax, that's a good sign. Things like that.
Tax wealth like work, and we would have a different country within a couple of years. It's basically that simple. I just want to hammer one point that you made there, Bob, and then I'm going to have to say goodbye to you for now. I hope you could. I'll reach out because I got to get you back on. I want to talk to you at length and do an entire segment about why people need to stop fixating on the national debt. In a nutshell, we print money and we are the reserve currency of the world. We'll always be able to figure it out, people. My special guest this half hour for day five of Joe Biden's Top 100, Senior Tax Policy Advisor for the Patriotic Millionaires, Bob Lord. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye. We'll be back after your farm update. A couple of important messages with my very next special guest, Mr. Tim Hanley, Acting Dean of the Marquette University College of Business. We'll dig in. It'll be fun. My friend Tim is up next. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Voodoo economics. Did it work? Anyone? Anyone know the effects? It did not work.
Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is the Scani Summer Statewide Text to Win Giveaway. We're going to be dropping the magic word of the day on you top of this hour. You can then text to win. We got getaways to Lake Geneva, Door County, the Wis Dells, Wis Vegas, I like to call it. I mean, call a spade a spade. It's Wis Vegas.
It's a playground for all.
Yes, you can get your old-timey photos taken, hop on a water slide, and be gambling by the evening. I mean, it's got everything you could possibly need. Wisconsin Dells, where's Crystal Lake with a pontoon boat. I mean, the pontoon boat. We were talking about this yesterday. I get a vision in my head of the pontooning in the summer. It's a very distinctly Wisconsin thing. I mean, I know other people have pontoons, but we are expert pontooners, the tie-ups. You get all the meat and cheese played out, a cold champagne of beers. I bet Eric Hovde's is like gluten-free.
Really?
No crackers. Does he eat sausage? He seems to pride himself on his fitness.
You know what? I'm not sure that any of the things that would be traditionally Wisconsin really lead towards someone to having a fit body. Just saying, although we have produced
you got to counteract it.
We have produced some very amazing athletes out of the state.
Say Bonnie Blair is like, what are you talking about? I'm amazing.
Yeah, but she also burns like 4 billion calories a day. So
Correct.
That's the other thing.
What you shouldn't do, friends, is sit behind a radio microphone for like 2.5 hours a day. That's not conducive.
Yeah, it does induce a little bit of stress and stress eating as
stress
well.
Stress eating, yeah.
I can attest.
But not on the air. Not on the air.
That's true. Or is it?
So Scotty's summer text to win coming up at the top of the hour. You're not going to want to miss it. I'll drop the secret word. You can text in via the app. You'll be entered to win. We got one winner per hour, one winner per day, and 2 grand prize winners. Don't miss it. But now I am so very happy. It's such a pleasure doing this job to, on occasion, get to talk to people that I have just deep affinity and respect for, and people that I've been lucky enough to call friends in my career. And I'm really excited to be joined by one such person, my friend and the current acting dean of Marquette University's College of Business, Tim Hanley. Thanks, Tim, for being here.
Oh, Maggie, such a pleasure to be with you.
It's so much fun. Tim and I, we met right before COVID. You had just come in as the executive in residence, and for some unfortunate circumstances, you were asked to come in as the acting dean of the business school. You had spent your entire career before becoming Marquette's dean of the College of Business in the private sector, and we have quaffed many a beverage and talked about the distinct differences between private sector, and I was working in the government at the time, you were in academia. What was that change like for you? Because I know it was sort of, oh, this is very different.
Well, you know for sure this wasn't my lifetime aspiration.
Yeah, when you were 19, you weren't thinking, I'm going to be a business school dean.
Yeah, I'll work for 40 years and then I'll run a business school.
Yes.
But you know the circumstances.
Yeah.
It's actually a privilege to have been in this job. And it's a little bit different world, much like I'm sure it was different between your business career and your government career.
Yes.
The world in academia moves at a different pace.
Yeah.
There's different protocols. But far and away, the good has outweighed the bad. A lot of people ask me, well, wow, like what's it really like?
Yeah.
And it takes some time. And you and I had similar careers the first part of our careers, yeah. And we had to be nimble. And we were entrusted to make decisions. And there's a little bit more process in academia, as you probably can appreciate, from government.
Yeah, of course. There's a lot of stakeholders, and everybody effectively gets a say. And it's interesting because I've often, and this isn't a question unless you wish to comment on it. I think your experience moving from the private sector into academia, specifically higher ed, right, and how different it was. I have often talked with people that are thinking about running for elected office, no matter what their politics are, but who have never had anything to do with the government before, to talk to some people who do that work, because there are skills and ideas and innovation that you can bring from the private sector into these very, very different cultures and environment and processes. But it's not a direct translation. It requires approaching problem solving in a very different way. And so I've always sort of asked people, hey, you may be a very, very successful business person and you think you know you got all the answers, but talk to some people who've been working at this for a while, because if you think there's a simple solution that somebody just has not been smart enough to identify, once you get in there, you realize that it's only the hard stuff that's left.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, I was thrust into this job, yes, without an awful lot of preparation. But the world works differently. There's a concept of shared governance. You, yes, just described it. It means everybody has a say.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't always work that way when you were leading businesses.
Yeah.
But there's so many things, Maggie, that are transferable. So many of the reality of it is, when I was in my first career, you certainly know, I'm a fairly senior partner at Deloitte, a large, yeah, global accounting consulting firm. We had to work with others that we work for.
Yes.
We had to present business cases to get things done. You simply have to take some of that and bring people with you. And that's been, I think, the learning, and a lot I learned in those first 12 months, which, by the way, were entirely at the initiation of COVID.
Yes. Really easy transition period for a new leader in higher ed right during COVID. You hit on something, Tim, that I think is so interesting. And again, I'm frequently asked to talk about this when I'm addressing young adults trying to identify what they want to do in their career. And I wondered if you could speak on this a bit based on your work as a very senior partner at Deloitte, one of their global business leaders, but also having led the business school. That is, for people listening, you got kids that are looking, okay, what is my child, my young adult who's graduating from college or thinking about college or tech school, what is the differentiator skill? Because you were describing something there, Tim, that I think is a huge difference maker wherever you work. What is the skill that, in your experience, skill or skills that you think are absolutely essential for people to find professional happiness and satisfaction?
Yeah, it's a great question. I sometimes describe it as a secret sauce. You know,
yeah,
in this role, I spend a lot of time with 18 and 19-year-olds and their parents, talking to them about whether the Marquette College of Business is the right place for them to start their career. I think there's a couple of things that we do well, and I know this not just because I'm the dean, but in my previous life, I hired literally hundreds of men and women into the firms that I work with from Marquette. I think there's this concept of emotional intelligence, Maggie, that you and I certainly didn't know when we were 19 and 20 year olds.
Wasn't even a thing.
Probably wasn't even invented okay. then. But it's a concept of really putting yourself in others' shoes. I think we do a great job with the technical stuff. I mean, think about the career you had, the amazing career that you had that started with your Marquette undergraduate degree. We do a great job of whether you're a marketer, you're a supply chain expert, you're a CPA. We do a great job of giving you that kind of background. But I think there's more. I think that's really, when you think about all of higher ed, and the challenge we're all facing because mm-hmm. the demographics are working against us. There's going to be less kids every year graduating from college, given just what's happened. And so I think you have to have a bit of a differentiator. And I think we work really hard at Marquette to do that. And there's a lot of ways that we try to get that done.
When I think about when I've had kind of aha moments in my career, they have often come about because it finally clicks to me what it is, like where my work fits within a particular strategy or where my work fits from the boss that I'm reporting to, and then where that sits as part of what is this organization's goal, right? And how is this organization selling to its clients or its community? How in government, how are we serving the community? And seeing where my small widget, where my cog fits in this bigger picture, and then adjusting my strategy or what I'm trying to do with that always centered and in mind. In other words, we all think of things in self-reference, but if we abandon that entirely and think about, well, what's the vision here? What's the overall goal? And am I helping us get there? I think I've found different and deeper meaning in my work too when I can think of it that way.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? You've taken a number of career pivots. I've certainly yes. taken a career pivot I didn't expect. But there's so many learnings from the first parts of your career, all the various different parts of my career. I think there's one thing, then you and I have talked about this over a beer or two in the past, and that's this concept of servant leadership.
Yeah.
I think that is one of the things that gets embedded in the kind of Jesuit education that we both have.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of one of the guiding principles today at a pretty advanced part of my career. I still mentor younger professionals, much like I'm sure you do as well. And this whole concept of servant leadership, which means, you know, you serve those that work for you by helping them, full stop, really simple. And so, you know, I learned that from role models. You had role models yeah. early in your career. And I think that is part of this special secret sauce we talk about sometimes.
It's interesting that you put it in that lens. And certainly I think of that when I think of Marquette. It's also something that I talk about using slightly different language as I try to ask every one of you that are listening, how do you evaluate, how do you approach election cycles? And I'm always saying to people, it's you'd be shocked at how actually apartisan or not partisan at all it is. And if you can lean into the idea of, is this a person that you can see actively putting the people they serve as an elected official above their own personal interests? You might have a little something there, and less about the party, more about, are they serving the people that they swore an oath to serve? And when you come at it from that lens, I think we're able to find much more agreement than disagreement. And I think it enables and empowers folks listening, you all out there, to help make better informed decisions. Because politicians are rhetoricians. And enough of the fancy words and the and the lines, you know. One of the things I wanted to ask you, Tim, had you been a dean, say, in the middle of your career or done work in this kind of different shared governance structure, would it have, and if so, how would it have impacted how you did your prior work at Deloitte?
Yeah, I think one of the things I've learned, and we've tried, as you know, because you've been serving on my advisory board for as long as I've known you, we've tried a number of new things because in higher ed, we have to keep reinventing ourselves.
Yes.
And in doing these new things, you have to take people on the journey.
Yes.
And so I think one of the things I learned, I may have told you this story, early on, I had a great idea. It was a new program. It was going to be margin and revenue accretive. It was a brilliant idea. And
I was about
to adopt it. And my number two goes, Tim, remember, we have to have listening sessions. We have to have a vote. I go, a vote?
About what?
But the learning, to get yes. to your question, the learning is taking people on the journey with you. So I've been over now 4+ years.
Yeah.
Everything we wanted to do, we have gotten done. And I think people feel better that they're on a journey.
Yeah, it's bringing people along, right? And one of the greatest sayings, and I'm sure Adam Grant has a version of it, right? Brené Brown probably is. Every guru to corporate leadership people has a version of this. But someone said it to me really simply, and I went, oh, yeah. If you're running as fast as you can, you're going to get to where you want to go, and you're going to look around, and no one else is going to be there with you, and it doesn't matter. That we always have to be working to bring each other along. And boy, folks, if you're listening out there, isn't that kind of a good metaphor for life? We got to be doing it together, bringing people along. My special guest this half hour, Mr. Tim Hanley, Dean of Marquette's College of Business. His time there is coming to an end. This is kind of a little bit of a celebration tour for Mr. Hanley. Stick around. I'll be back with Tim after these very important messages here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
This weekend, as long as you're getting outside, I can tell you what might increase the odds of finding a new love. You enter the Civic Media Scotty Summer Statewide Text to Win contest, and you're on some fabulous weekend outing in Wisconsin Dells, West Vegas. What were the Door County, Lake Geneva, Crystal Lake, out on that pontoon
all
boat?
All I heard was pontoon boat.
Pontoon boat.
And if I were you, I would definitely get your Civic Media Radio app. If you don't have it, you can go to anywhere that your fine apps are hunted and caught and captured.
Caught and
killed. Yeah. Caught and killed. Mm-hmm. Right. Catch mm-hmm. and kill. Mm-hmm. That's the phrase. Anyway, I was getting to that. The point is that you should download the Civic Media app. Get ready to go and text in the Maggie Dawn Show, because in the next hour, we're going to give you the secret word to text in.
Super secret word.
Yep. You can double your points, but we'll tell you about that later.
And you don't actually get the pontoon boat. It's just a weekend that includes a free pontoon boat rental.
And you don't have to bring yours. It's already there.
Yeah.
One less thing.
Best boat, Tim, you got to admit, right, is your friend's boat. No question about that.
Without a doubt. I have one. I have a pontoon myself.
This is not why we're friends, but it's certainly a perk.
Always easier on somebody else's.
Yeah. My special guest this half hour, soon to be retired acting dean of Marquette's College of Business Administration, got tapped for the job a bit unexpectedly. It has been a journey. For the parents out there across the state and folks that may be listening in other parts of the country, and you've got a child that's approaching college age, how would you suggest a parent or parents and a kid or somebody that's trying to help a child, a young person, decide whether or not college or university is a good fit for them? Just that first question. How would you be going about that if your kids were still this age?
Yeah, so we went through that process ourselves. My kids, as you know, are in their 30s, so yep. well past those decision points. It's a really important decision, and I think it's really important that it's your child's decision with your feedback. So the amount of due diligence of understanding what those environments are like, whether it's a tech school, whether it's a two-year university, whether it's a four-year university, I think do your homework. Go try your best to try to understand what those environments are like and see what works best.
One of the things that I've often tried to tell people in a slightly different framework, but people call me all the time, should I go to law school? And one of the things that I sit down with them and work with them through is, do you have is this going to be self-funded? Do you have savings? Are your parents, are you going to be working? Are you going part-time? Let's look at, frankly, the incomes that people graduating from the law schools that you think you can get into are earning. Hey, is that enough, right? Because when you go to graduate programs, you're giving up. You have that opportunity cost where you're not earning yourself because you're continuing your education. When we turn and look at the question of tech program, associate's program, four-year college or university, one of the things that I think has gotten lost a bit in the labor crunch, right? Like great demand, especially for folks with technical skills, whether you're coming out of a business school and a four-year program, whether you're getting technical skills and you can run, you're a machinist, right? You can get a job right now. It is a seller's market, as it were, for folks. But one of the things that I think has gotten lost in just the brass tacks, the business decision-making around tech degree or four-year college or university is, well, I can get a job, and so I go off and do that. And I don't need to go to a four-year college or university. And what I think has gotten lost a little bit in that, and if you can, Tim, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, is that at its best, the opportunity that a college or a four-year college or university program provides is exposure to a whole lot of different areas of thought, a lot of different disciplines, right? And an environment where at its best, professors and your classmates and your teaching assistants and the whole panoply of people are helping you to understand not what to think, but how to think and how to analyze things better. And that skill, given AI and given deep fakes and given all the constant, we have 24/7 information, helping young people learn how to think better, to question, to peel apart the layers of an onion of a problem. Like that environment at a four-year college or university it's not the only way to get there by any means, but it is. In well-run programs, there's no way you come out of that without improving the way that you think.
Couldn't agree more. This is point of helping people become critical thinkers.
Yeah.
And by the way, on doing that with a sense of understanding right from wrong and understanding mm-hmm. the ethics and the world we're about to head into an AI.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think these 4 years are hugely important. Very few 18 and 19-year-olds know exactly where they want their career to be. A lot of people come to the Marquette College of Business and believe they want a business career, don't know in which discipline. And these are 4 really important years where you can see things.
Yes.
You can get internships and see if you like things. And so I think these years of course, I'm biased on the dean of a business school, but they're incredibly important and formative.
Yeah, I look back. I am about the most sort of cliched poster child for everything Wisconsin education has to offer, because I went to a small Catholic grade school in Milwaukee. I then went to Rufus King High School for the college bound and MPS school. I then went to Marquette, not just for my 4-year undergrad. I was a very fortunate beneficiary of a full ride scholarship. Marquette then paid me to stay to get a graduate degree there. And then Wisconsin paid me to go to Wisconsin and get a law degree. What is true about all of that is that I never thought for one instant any of my professors had a particular partisan bias to how or what they were teaching me. And all of them wanted me to be a better thinker because of it. Thank you for what you've done for our young people in the state of Wisconsin, Tim, for Marquette, for southeastern Wisconsin, for the Milwaukee community, but more importantly for the state. When we think better, we are better, and we do that work together. Thanks. Dean Tim Hanley of the Marquette College of Business, congratulations on your retirement.
Great pleasure to be with you, Maggie. Take care.
Wonderful. Thanks to Tim Hanley, the Marquette University Acting Dean of Business. He's about to have a fabulous retirement, actually go off into the sunset, which he thought he was doing 4.5 years ago. Very thankful to have him. We got more coming up for you. It's top of the hour. You're going to hear news, weather, and sports. The secret word is coming. So you can text to win on the Scani Summer statewide text to win competition. I'm Maggie Dawn. Brian Kelly's in the booth. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us. 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842. Back in a moment.
If there's one thing I've learned in life, it's that learning things never taught me nothing, and books is the worst.